Good morning, human rights activists all over the world. Welcome back to Communication Workers of America, CWA, Human Rights Hour Power, a justice field hour of talk, solidarity, and worker power right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you're traveling or visiting the beautiful city of Houston, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on kyokradio.org or on the CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour, H-O-U-R, of power on your favorite podcast player. This morning, our hearts are broken by the tragic mid-air collision near Washington, D.C. between a Black Hawk helicopter on training mission and an American Airlines plane on approach to Reagan National Airport. To the families, friends, loved ones, and the AFA-CWA Union brothers, sisters, and siblings who are grieving this unimaginable loss, we hope and pray you find comfort in the love and support of those around you, as well as strength in the cherished memories of those who were lost. Our deepest condolences go out to everyone who is mourning. Our hearts are with you during this time of profound grief. Our prayers and love are sent to each and every one of you. Thank you for joining us on the CWA Human Rights Hour Power radio show this morning. We have a phenomenal show lineup with Mykia Jones, Sir Reginald Small, Timia Wiley, she's somewhere in the air, and Tay Akins is here today. So don't you dare change that dial. We're talking about National Poverty in America Awareness Month, Tea with Tay, Poverty in America and CWA's role in combating it. We're going to just continue that conversation that we had from last week. Then we're going to move on into Tea with Tay Part 2, and we're going to be talking about staying visible and informed. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas to Minnesota, Canada to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. Our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 26 months striking on the picket lines, and yet they are out striking, still churning out the news with facts for you and me. So let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. And while we're talking about those CWAers, they have been waging America's longest-running strike. They have won a precedent-setting legal victory that will protect the rights of workers to picket their employer without fear or intimidation. Last week, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania denied a final appeal by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and affirmed a Supreme Court ruling that upheld the right of striking workers to picket, which is protected under both state and federal law. The Post-Gazette had initially sought an injunction to prevent their striking employees from picketing a PG facility where scab workers were doing the work of union members. So the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania rightly saw through the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette attempts to intimidate workers exercising their right to join together and has denied the PG's effort to waste all of our time in court when we should be meeting at the bargaining table. CWA District 213 Vice President Mike Davis. CWA members have been on strike for more than 2 years, and with their dedication and solidarity, they have won important legal victories that affirm the rights of all workers, people in Pennsylvania. This enforces what we've been saying all along, said Natalie DeLiba, striking editor and page designer and secretary of the Newspaper Guild of Pittsburgh. This injunction was yet another waste of resources and a clear attempt at intimidation. We look forward to the company accepting its wrongs and putting its time and money to better use by respecting us and bargaining a contract that includes dignified health care and reinstating the terms they illegally tore up years ago. For bringing this frivolous lawsuit on workers' rights to take collective action, the Post-Gazette now owes the cost of legal fees to the striking workers. CWA Locals 14827 and 14842, the Newspaper Guild of Pittsburgh, CWA, and PPPWU Local 24M9N. The Post-Gazette is facing multiple court cases for its unlawful conduct. including a ruling expected next month on the National Labor Relations Board request for an injunction against the PG for its numerous violations of labor law against advertising workers, mailers, and press workers. Then the Third Circuit Court of Appeals would take up the NLRB's request for an injunction over the PG's numerous violations of labor law against its editorial workers, members of the Newspaper Guild Pittsburgh, CWA. You are tuned into KYOK 1140 AM at the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. George Takaki, I have the honor of speaking about a man whose life and work exemplifies resilience, courage, and activism. George Takaki, many of you may recognize him as the beloved Hakuru Sulu from Star Trek. But beyond the science fiction universe, Taki has been a fearless champion for human rights, advocating for racial justice, LGBTQIA plus equality, and the protection of democratic values. His journey from childhood internment to international activism is an inspiring testament of the power of using one's voice for change. George Takaki was born in 1937 to Japanese American parents in Los Angeles, California. His early years were shaped by one of the darkest chapters in American history, Japanese internment during World War II. At just 5 years old, Takaki and his family were forcibly removed from their home and placed in internment camps, stripped of their rights as American citizens. They were among the 120,000 Japanese Americans unjustly incarcerated simply because of their heritage. This traumatic experience left an indelible mark on Takaki. As a child, he could not fully grasp the political and racial forces that had placed his family behind barbed wire. But as he grew older, he came to understand the deep injustice of what had happened. The forced internment of Japanese Americans was not just a historical event. It was a violation of civil liberties fueled by racism and wartime hysteria. This realization sparked a lifelong commitment to human rights. He's gone from actor to advocate. After studying theater at UCLA, Taki pursued a career in Hollywood, a path not without its own challenges. In an era when Asian American representation was scarce, he fought for many roles that did not perpetuate harmful stereotypes. Star Trek became a groundbreaking opportunity, not only because it was a rare moment of diversity in media, but because the show itself reflected the values of equality and inclusion. However, it was later in life that he fully embraced activism on a larger scale. He became a vocal advocate for Japanese American civil rights, working tirelessly to ensure that the injustice of internment were acknowledged and never repeated. His memoir, They Called Us Enemy, serves as a powerful account as this dark history, educating new generations on the dangers of racial discrimination and government outreach. Another defining moment in his activism came in 2005 when he publicly came out as gay. Though he had been in a committed relationship for years, he had remained silent due to the homophobia deeply embedded in Hollywood and American society. But when then California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger vetoed a bill that would have legalized same-sex marriage, he decided he could not stay silent any longer. He became one of the most prominent Asian American LGBTQIA plus activists advocating for marriage equality, anti-discrimination laws, and visibly for queer people of color. In 2008, he married his longtime partner, Brad Altman, in a public and historic moment for LGBTQIA plus rights. He has used his humor, intelligence, and social media influence to challenge homophobia, promote inclusivity, and fight against bigotry. What makes George Takaki's activism so powerful is that it is rooted in personal experience. He understands firsthand what it means to be marginalized, to have rights stripped away and to live in a society that often fails to recognize the humanity of all its people. But rather than allowing these experiences to make him bitter, he has used them to fuel his fight for justice. Through his storytelling, his activism, and his unwavering commitment to equality, Takaki has helped shape a more just world. Whether he is speaking on racial injustice, LGBTQIA plus rights, or the importance of democracy, his message is clear. We must learn from history. We must stand against oppression, and we must work together to create a future where all people are treated with dignity and respect. George's journey from an internment camp to the world stage is one of resilience and purpose. He reminds us that no matter our profession, background, or circumstances, we all have the power to advocate for what is right. His life's work challenges us to be vigilant against injustice and to use our voices just as he has to make a difference. You're tuned into KYOK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 a.m. Pacific on kyokradio.org or on your CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Up next, we have Makia Jones, who will be discussing the month's initiative focusing on raising awareness on poverty in America. During this segment, Makia will highlight the significance of this month, the challenges faced by those living in poverty, and the importance of advocating for change and support within our communities. Join us as we learn more about how we can contribute to making differences in the lives of individuals and families affected by poverty across the nation. Good morning, Makia. We can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, listeners. I missed you all last week. I was a little under the weather, but I'm so happy to be back today. You guys carried the torch for me and made sure that we had a great rousing discussion about poverty in America. And I'm just going to go back a little bit and give you all some history on how this became a holiday. So this holiday aims to recognize the severe conditions of poverty that many are living in. So yes, National Poverty in America Awareness Month is in January. And in the United States, although we are a developed nation and one of the greatest nations and countries in the world, there are still thousands of people who are deprived of three meals a day, quality education, and even clean and healthy drinking water. In fact, many can't even afford warm clothes during the winter. So what is poverty? So for some African and Asian nations, poverty is inaccessibility to healthcare, necessary vaccines, food, water, and shelter. While education is considered important in developed nations, struggling countries choose food over being able to read. This is why the definition of poverty differs from the continent to continent. In the United States, those who cannot afford a recreational trip or pay for medication are also considered to be living below the poverty line. And due to the differing inflation and employment statistics of each country, several international organizations have outlined their own definitions of poverty. So according to the United Nations, poverty is the inability of having choices and opportunities, a violation of human dignity. This means that people who do not have enough means to feed or clothe their family or send their children to school are considered to be living in poverty. Now, the World Bank, on the other hand, describes poverty as a condition where the education and healthcare levels are low and there is no access to clean water or sanitation. It's the lack of physical security and the unavailability of options for one to improve their life and standard of living is also included in poverty. Whereas in the European Union, poverty is defined as being closely linked to the distribution of income. So whichever definition one chooses to go with, poverty causes numerous problems in a country, such as high crime rate. Poverty is seen as a social illness that gives rise to inequality, hatred, and discrimination. And the negative long-term consequences of poverty are the motivational factors for world leaders to strive to reduce the level of poverty across the globe. So I know last week I heard we had a rousing conversation about poverty awareness in America, and I hate that I missed it, but I just wanted to give our listeners and our audience just a little history lesson on what poverty, National Poverty and America Awareness Month is, and I'm going to turn it back over to Errol to bring us a little bit further and back into that discussion from last week.
And I think Mr. Minor is muted.
Oh, here we go. All right. Are we there now? All right. We gather to address an issue affecting millions of Americans and undermining our society's very fabric, poverty. January is Poverty in America Awareness Month. It is a time to spotlight the daily systemic challenges millions of families face. As Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. reminded us, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Poverty, as a form of injustice, demands our attention and action. Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, has emphasized the critical issue of healthcare access in America. Like the severe consequences of the
Okay, I think we're having some minor connection issues. So this is a good time now. I'm pretty excited to talk a little bit about our gender justice that we have been spreading all across this nation. Gender justice for our radio listeners. And first of all, I'm Reginald Small. I am Reginald Small, and I remain Reginald Small, Civil Rights and Equity Chairperson for Communications Workers of America. And it is good to be here this morning. And good morning, KYOK radio listeners. Speaking of gender justice is a training that we have been spreading across the country. And the name of the class, Gender Justice, also, of course, implies that there are injustices in gender. And this class, I just wanted to give a shout out to all of the CWA local unions who have hosted our facilitators in throughout the nation, throughout the nation, and give a shout out to all the trainers who have actually spread this word, this very important message across. We're in a time right now where there are injustices in gender, and we at CWA, we are tackling those injustices. I believe Errol, who's back with us, just actually did hosted a class down in Florida. Errol, are you back with us?
Yes, I am back with you. Sorry about that. I don't know what's going on with the internet.
All right. So, Errol, we were just talking about gender justice, and we know that you host class down there. You talked to we did a gender justice class, and we did an implicit bias class down there. I'm excited always to talk about either one of those classes because we talk about the biases, we talk about gender and labor, we take a peek back to look at how far we've gone, and then we talk about current issues and where we need to focus. And we've been doing this gender stuff for about 2 years, and as we would have it, we were being prepared for such a time as this. Because in looking at the news,
Yes.
looking at everything that's going on, we do have marginalized groups that are, in some ways, I hate to use this word, but are under attack. And they need our support. They need the rallying troops to come around them and embrace them. Because I don't care what political group is in office or what your political affiliation is, I am rooted and grounded that equality for all, that all men deserve, all mankind deserves to be treated with dignity and respect. And in some ways, education is the only way forward, the only path forward to shine a light on the people that are fighting a fight and may not have the numbers to make their voices heard. So, Errol, tell us, how did it go down in Florida?
Listen, it went marvelously. I mean, just wonderful. And it is something when the trainer gets excited about the class. So I want to give a huge shout out to CWA Local 3140 in Miami, Florida, local president Marilyn Campos, the human rights chair Roshonda McAdams, and their incredible team for hosting their first gender justice and implicit bias training classes in a time when equity and inclusion are more important than ever. Your leadership in bringing these crucial conversations to the forefront is both necessary and inspiring. And we need more of this across our locals and throughout our district. The training that challenges bias, strengthens solidarity, and empowers our members to advocate for justice in our workplaces and communities. And this is how we build a stronger, more united union that represents and uplifts all workers. So, congratulations on this important milestone, and may it be the first of many at CWA Local 3140 in Miami, Florida. Now, I must give great congratulations, big congratulations, huge congratulations, and warm welcome to all of the new CWA human rights activists of CWA Local 3140. I want them to know stepping into this work takes courage, dedication, and a deep commitment to justice. And you are now a part of a proud legacy of union activists fighting for equity, dignity, and fairness for all. And the road ahead may not always be easy, but know that you are not alone. You have a powerful community standing beside you. Your voices, your passion, and your willingness to challenge injustices will make a difference in your local, in your district, and beyond. So stay strong, stay encouraged, and keep pushing, because when we fight for human rights, we fight for every worker, every family, and every future. So thank you, Reginald Small, for allowing me to encourage and welcome our new activists and encourage CWA Local 3140 in Miami, Florida. All
Good.
right. So
That was actually great work that you did down there. I've been hearing some great things from that class and the excitement and the energy that you actually brought to it. I know that you are a great facilitator because I've seen you in action before. So hats off to you, Errol, as well.
well, thank you so much. Well, when we fight, we win. Let's move right on back to our poverty discussion, where I was talking and something happened, technically, but that's okay. That's why you're able to go back to our website and listen to it after we conclude. So we're going to get right back into discussing of poverty awareness in America. And I think I left off in dealing with or in talking about Dr. William Barber, and I want to pick right back up. He is the co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, and he's emphasized the critical issue of healthcare access in America. He points out that approximately 37 million people lack health insurance. And Dr. Barber highlights the severe consequences of this issue, stating that for every 1 million individuals without healthcare, over 5,000 die each year due to the unavailability of essential medical services. He also notes that the United States is the only one among the 25 wealthiest nations that does not provide universal health care to its citizens. Dr. Barber describes this situation as a form of policy violence against the poor, stressing the moral and ethical implications of denying health care to millions. And I want you to understand something, that poverty is not merely a lack of money, it's a lack of opportunity, equity, and hope. In the wealthiest nation in the world, nearly 37 million people live below the poverty line. This includes families struggling to put food on the table, young people unable to afford education, and seniors choosing between medication and utilities. As civil rights leader Marion Wright Edelman, founder of the Children's Defense Fund, said, "A nation that does not stand for its children does not stand for anything and will not stand tall in the future." So, What is the role of CWA in addressing poverty? I can go ahead and tell you that the Communication Workers of America deeply understands that the fight against poverty is intrinsically linked to the pursuit of equity, justice, and opportunity for all. Recognizing that poverty often stems from inadequate and broken systems, CWA is re resolutely committed to transforming these challenges into pathways for progress. You know how we do it? By advocating for living wages. And we all know that Makia is our pay gap guru. She can talk about that all day. Advocating for living wages, protecting workers' rights. Those are just two of the initiatives that CWA addresses when it comes to poverty. And we also deal with closing equity gaps,
Yeah, and I'm
supporting
sorry,
broader.
Errol. I'm glad you said that. I was working over here trying to figure out what's going on with the internet. It seems like the internet is down just about almost everywhere, and it's driving me crazy. But yeah, here at CWA, we're really fighting and championing for marginalized groups and women in the fight for equal pay. And I know a lot of people say, when you're in the union, most people get the same amount of pay, and that's great, but the union doesn't make up the majority of the workforce. And so our goal here is to not only uplift everyone in the union, but every working person in the world. And so when you think about the fact that, Equal Pay Day, I want to say for some women, like Latina women, isn't until November. So they would have worked almost a whole year before they make the same amount of pay as men, as a certain demographic of men in that same industry for doing the same or like work. So as a union and as labor, CWA, our job and our goal and what we're trying to do is bring awareness. So pretty soon we'll have a website launched and ready where people can go on and they can view and see what their pay rate is compared to others in that same field doing the same kind of jobs. And it just it'll I believe we believe that it'll give better insight on what they should bargain for and what they should act for and contractualize when they go out to look for jobs. And it basically lets you know that you're not getting what you're worth.
And not only closing the equity gaps, the pay equity gaps, but then we also seek after supporting broader legislation. We have a commitment that extends beyond the scope of just labor contracts because we actively advocate for transformative legislation aimed at improving the overall welfare of working families, including initiatives such as Medicaid expansion, paid family leave. Our goal is to effect systemic change that enhances the lives of workers and their families on a broader scale. And then, of course, Makia did say something about bridging the digital divide through our targeted campaigns for affordable broadband access. CWA highlights its commitment to uplifting underserved communities by advocating for equitable access to technology. Why do we do this? We aim to provide these communities with the vital resources and opportunities for growth, education, and connection in an increasingly digital world. That's where we are. We are in a digital society now, and we're leaning and depending on it more than ever now. And we can see that the technology that we're having today, the technology problems that we're having today, maybe it's someone out there in a marginalized community that can really fix these issues.
I totally agree, Errol. I want to skip back just a little bit over to the supporting broader legislation and the importance of that our commitment does extend beyond labor contracts. The word I'm thinking of is organize, organize, organize. That means that we're not just looking for better contracts for already established contracts. We're actually, in order to kind of help fix this gap, we have to go external. We need to bring people in, unionize, organize, and then us, we that are already in the union, we have to mo help mobilize around these particular issues while we're organizing. So that's a very important piece. Also, regardless of the political affiliation, whomever is in office, that's your representative. And we have to still push our what we believe in and what the agenda is that's going to better the lives of mankind in general.
Of course, you are absolutely correct on that, and that's why when we bring when we focus on these critical issues, CWA is not only fighting poverty, but it's also fostering a more equitable and just society for everyone. I'm reminded, and I think a lot of us, we draw inspiration from contemporary voices like Dr. William J. Barber of the Poor People's Campaign. Dr. Barber always says that poverty is a moral crisis, and we must stop blaming the poor and start blaming the systems that create poverty. And even Bryan Stevenson from Montgomery, Alabama, the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative, he urges us to see the humanity in the fight against poverty. And he said, and I quote, "The opposite of poverty is not wealth, it's justice." And this reminds us that our fight is about fairness, dignity, and the right for everyone to thrive. And that's why we have a call to action, that our efforts are just one piece of the puzzle. And to truly address poverty, we need collective actions. Just like you said earlier, Reginald, our unions must organize. The unions must grow. We've got to support initiatives, and not only grow the union and support initiatives, but we've got to speak up. It's time out for us being quiet. We have to speak up. We've got to advocate for policies that reduce poverty, such as increased minimum wages, universal health care, and robust social safety nets. And I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about that in part two of Tea with Tay, because I see she's gotten off of mute. So come on, Tay. We can just slide right on to it with part two of Tea for Tay.
Well, so yes, a lot of what we're talking about as far as poverty. Last week we highlighted the fact that sometimes people have this stereotype that people in poverty are people who don't work. And as everyone has highlighted here, it's that's not true. And people who live in poverty are sometimes overworking themselves, and they're having to choose between a decent meal and just eating at all, or getting medication for that week. Or we talked about the cost of the for wages last week when we were talking about an average person makes $40,000 a year, but you have to have five times rental proof to live somewhere. So a lot of what we've been going over, and we talk about poverty and what we need to do when it comes to legislative, we need to highlight these things because they miss it sometimes. They completely miss it because they don't deal with our issues. So as working people, we have to step to a table that maybe they don't understand, but I need you to really hear me so that you can fight for me. I'm fighting for you. I need you to fight for me. So that's where it comes into the going to our legislative or going to our representative. You actually can approach your representatives, and they'll stay and have a conversation with you. I know that by experience. They'll ask you a few questions, and it's they'll take some information from you because they do want to understand. Like, again, sometimes I hate to say it this way, but a lot of people want to get reelected, right? So what do you need to do? You need to stand for the people who continue to put you where you are. I need you to understand my issues and what's going on here with me. And wages is a big issue, and we are in America, so let's be honest, money fixes a lot. And that's all we're asking for is a livable wage, not a wage that I can kind of make it, but a ways that I can be comfortable too, and my kids can experience a vacation maybe once a year. I'm not even asking for twice a year. I'm asking for once a year and still be able to feed them healthy food options.
But and you know what, Tay? I love that you said that. And I feel like it's so much more than that. And like Errol said, somebody quoted, it is by design, right? So we already live in a situation in society where, for some reason, there's a disconnect between the policies that we have and what's considered a livable wage, right? So that's one issue. And then at the same time, we also have issues where school systems aren't funded properly. And that means the poor kids go to the poor schools and get poor educations, and they're not able to have the same access to certain things as the other kids in different areas. And then that also leads to now, if you don't have that same access, you don't have those same privileges, it leads to other things that keep people down and keep people in poverty. So, like I mentioned before, when I talked about the holiday in general, poverty is not solely just about the wages. It's about the conditions in which we are living in. When we have people in this United States, this great country, right, where they still don't have clean water, where we have unhoused communities like Skid Row that are the same size as large cities, worth of unhoused people who don't have access or don't have the means to get to the means to get to the means to get out of poverty. So there's so many different things that by design are made to keep people impoverished, and these are the things that we need to fight and to go against. Not necessarily like, and yes, livable wages is one of them, but like you said, affordable health care is also another issue. If I can't afford to keep myself healthy, then I can't afford to go to work to even try to obtain that wage. So there's so many other things. If I live in an impoverished community where I'm in a food desert and the only kind of foods I have access to are prepackaged, contaminated foods that are high in sodium and carbohydrates and cotton and all those fake sugars and things that are going to keep me unhealthy, and then I also can't afford the health care to get me healthy from eating these things. Like, there's so many different things that affect us when it comes to poverty outside of wages that we have to kind of broaden our views and look at what the larger picture is and see what other ways outside of wages that we can kind of uplift ourselves and our communities, because it's not just one thing. It's there's
And one
so
of the
many
things that you,
caveats to poverty.
all right. And one of the things that I want to piggyback off of that you said, Makia, and then another thing that Tay had said about nutritional foods. So if I forget that nutritional foods part, just remind me I need to come back to it. One of the things about marginalized our public school system and marginalized communities, they face significant challenges stemming from the systemic inequities in economic, social, and structural frameworks. And these barriers often manifest in the underfunded schools. They have, and then they wind up having insufficient access to mental health support services, increased exposure to adverse circumstances such as poverty and abuse. And it's beyond just perpetuating cycles of inequality. These conditions expose children even to heightened risk of human trafficking, particularly child sex trafficking. They don't have the security systems at the marginalized schools communities and stuff like that. So it perpetuates a whole lot. It affects everything. And then I want to go over to talking about nutritional meals. One of the things that, and I have to give an activist out of Birmingham, Alabama, a great big shout out because it was her that affected my life when it came to growing your own fruits and vegetables. Salita Soto out of Birmingham, Alabama, she used to work in the area of teaching people how to grow their own fruits and vegetables. And it was because of her. that I last year I started growing my own fruits and vegetables in my backyard. Now, was I perfect at it? No. But one thing that I did realize is that my fruits and vegetables lasted a whole lot longer and they tasted a whole lot better.
I think, Errol, you mentioned that. It makes me think about the community gardening that's taking place, and people are there are many many marginalized communities with the deserts living in where they can't get fresh produce and all that, and they are relying on going back to the basics of actually supplying their own communities with it, and it's very very beneficial. I would like to just touch on something. We're talking about schools and food programs and all of that. My mother tells a story. My mother was born in 1949, and she was raised basically by a single mother. 1949, single mother. She tells us how she often went to school. Her and her sisters went to school hungry, with no hope of coming back home with food, didn't know whether that would be food when she came back home. It wasn't a situation that she had a bad mother or anything, but the mother had to choose whether or not to buy food or pay the rent. And she said they've never been evicted at all because the mother chose to pay the rent. Now, I say that because that my mother again was born in 1949. In 2025, with America being great, parents should not have to choose whether to pay rent or buy food. We should have evolved much further than that. So there's definitely a problem. Now we can start into the chicken or the egg, which came first. I don't know how to solve it, but there's definitely a problem that needs to be looked at. We're not listening to the people who are actually having the problem. There are people who are trying to solve the problem, but haven't actually had a conversation with the people who are experiencing the problem. We want to put a band-aid on it. We want to say if you pass someone on the street, oh, don't give them money. That's enabling them. I mean, when are we going to stop and actually listen to the people who are experiencing the problem? Stop when you see a homeless person. Don't walk up to them and give them a bottle of water. Well, I'm sure that water might not be what they need that day. Ask them if you really want to help them. Ask them what it is that we can do. What is it that I can do today, right now, to help you? Because you can't solve the whole homelessness problem that day, but you can help one person that day by listening. I don't think we do enough listening.
And I'm glad you said that, Reginald, too, right? Because, like you said, there's a stigma behind poverty and the unhoused community and things like that. And we never think about the veteran, right? When we think about it, we don't think, like, when we think about poverty and we think about the unhoused community and, people have that stigma, you don't think that this is the veteran that served our country and they're now suffering from PTSD, so they cannot work, and now they're outside. We don't think about the little LGBTQIA plus child whose parents didn't accept them and they were put out of their homes and now they have to live outside. Like, there are so many different attributes to how people fall, and this is exactly why we need to be lifting them back up.
And you brought up something else, my kid. We're talking about LGBTQIA plus. The T in that, the trans community, is under attack. I mean, it's on the news. We're rolling back. We don't understand them. And so what's going to happen when they go to apply for jobs? People are going to think that they have a right to deny them employment or to treat them badly on a job or to just think that they're second class or no class citizens at all. What is that going to do? You take away a person's job, you send them spiraling into a life-changing event, which, I mean, it becomes a domino effect. We have to be careful of how we're treating people and the fights that we're in and how we can help lift up people and stop tearing them down, creating some kind of caste system that should have been outdated 100 years ago.
Correct. And then we
You
have to
absolutely.
again put the humanity back. I'm sorry, Errol, into ourselves, right? Like, that's why we as humans are who we are when it comes to the animal kingdom, right? Where is our humanity? Where is our compassion? Where is our evolvement? And another thing that I think about too is the fact that there was a priest that had got arrested recently for housing the unhoused community because they said that he was violating fire codes but it well, there were, below freezing temperatures outside. So he made a choice as a human being as to what he felt would be right for other humans. And, I was talking with our director, and there are a lot of shelters and things that are being shut down, and the funding for those places are being cut and shut down. So my ask is, where is our humanity? Where is our compassion for our fellow brothers and sisters and siblings? Where is our compassion for other people? And why have we as a society let it get to a point where we do not care for our fellow man, and we are okay and comfortable and content with seeing people in these positions where they can't care for themselves, and we don't care either?
Yes, and Makia, I always, whenever I have a conversation or an education or a training or whatever, I want to know, where is the action? What is the action? We can talk, we can talk, we can talk, and of course we're on KYOK radio and talk. That's part of education. But as far as a union person here within our unions, what is it that we can do? Well, we talk about the triangle. We talked about CWA is built on a triangle, with three lines here. One is movement building, one is organizing, and one is representation. But in the middle of that triangle is where I call the needed fluff. In the middle of it, the core of that triangle, that's where you have your committees that can actually do the work. That's where you have your Civil Rights and Equity Committee, your Women's Committee, and guess what? Community service committees are within that triangle. This is a message now that we need, and a lot of unions don't know what to do with some of these committees. This is where we hit those committees. Community Services Committee, this is where you can raise your hand and say, hey, I can take on some of these efforts. I can contact my local shelter. I can see what can be done. I can push the message out to my coworkers, because guess what? Our rank and file members, they are eager to do these things. They're eager to become involved once you give them the knowledge, the power, and the plan. So we can take action. We need to take action, involve our resources, involve those committees, point them in the direction to collaborate with already existing organizations that are doing great work, but just need the manpower, might need a fundraiser to be hosted. They need us. There's work to be done in every community, big or small. There is something you can do in those communities to fight this poverty issue.
And I'm glad you said
Tim, you
that,
got something
because
before I
we're
jump in
gonna,
there?
well, hold on one second. And I'm
Okay,
glad
I'm
Reggie
sorry about
said that, because
that.
we're gonna kind of pivot a little bit and kind of give us a little preview to what we're talking about next week, which is gonna be staying vigilant and staying visible and staying informed and educated with these things, right? Because like Reginald said, there is a need. There is a need, and there is an ask. And we have to make sure that we have access to each other, and that we have reach to spread the message and to get the kind of support that we need, right? So I've noticed that a lot of media has, there has been a lot of chatter on media about certain words and phrases and terms and things being shadow banned online. And we as human rights activists and as labor leaders, we have to make sure that we're doing our due diligence and making sure that we're actually reaching the masses and we're reaching the crowds, and that we're doing what we need to do to get this information out to the people, because there's a lot of misinformation on the internet. There's a lot of misinformation on the news. There's a lot of misinformation going when you play telephone with your neighbors and the people in your community sometimes. And we have to make sure that we are spreading proper information and that we're doing our best to help each other in that way.
Tay?
I just wanted to say, so these conversations, we always get into the heated discussion. Everyone has a passion.
We've gotten stuck already.
Yeah, so well, I just want to say that's basically what we wanted to talk about, what poverty, how poverty affects the poverty effects in America. But then also, as Sir Reginald said, we have ways that we can combat this through our unions, and we need to use them. So it's time to take action, and that's through organizing actions in your committees, as far as going to a food bank and trying to help out, seeing where you can donate, or organizing collections, organizing collections and things like that, as far as blankets and things we can go ahead and hand out to the unhoused. But one thing that we want to highlight here is that the main thing we want you to do is not judge someone when you don't know their situation. That's what I will put this on.
Hello, somebody. Say that again.
I said, don't
Don't
judge
judge.
someone if you don't know their situation.
And even if you do know this situation, don't judge them. Get rid of those implicit biases and mind your business and help them out. Because at the end of the day, judging ain't
Look at
helping
my kid
nobody.
getting a piece of this.
And I love that Tay just said something here when she said the unhoused. I love that. That's words are so important. And homeless has a stigma. I mean, I love the way you change that. And I'm going to try my very best in my season of wisdom to use that word, the unhoused. We have tried here in our district to call them our neighbors, because they're our neighbors.
They are,
Absolutely,
yes.
they're our neighbors.
And Reginald, I want to jump back to something that you said about helping someone. I'm reminded all the time someone had the nerve to say they got to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. But what if you don't have any bootstraps? What if you don't have any boots? That's why community must be involved. And I'm always reminded of a little song that I've been hearing in the little old church by the railroad tracks. Just a little money was raised, but many, many souls were saved. And that is, if I can help somebody, y'all don't want to get me started this morning.
I travel.
As I travel along, then my living is not in vain. And in today's society, in this element that we're in right now, we are seeing what George Takei, who I highlighted today, he and his family has gone through. And I'm going to digress right there so my kid will not throw me on mute. But And Reginald had talked about the communities, but I mean the committees, and we've got to talk about this within, and that is, what do you do when you don't when you have locals that don't want the committees?
I don't know whether they don't want them or they don't know what to do with them. They have them and they've gotten dusty. And it's up to us to help them blow the dust off and enlighten them and help them with a plan, and what they could be doing. Invite them to join in. We have this wonderful technology called Zoom. Invite them to join in with a committee that is active and actually has a plan. It can be an inspiration to someone that doesn't know what to do. I don't think that they don't want them. I don't think that. I'm gonna lean on optimism here. I just think maybe they don't know what to do with them. And that's our place. That is where we come in to try to help them create a sense of purpose and action.
And not to
I can
toot our
tell you
own
this.
horn, but as a national committee, we do have an action plan accessible. So if you would like a copy, you could just email us over here at the Human Rights Department and we will get you that action plan to help you get going and help you stimulate your committees.
Yes, that's true.
That
And
is absolutely
I'm old
correct.
school. I like to pick up a phone. So if you want to know something, just pick up the phone. I'll talk. You make eye contact with me and I'll talk. And he
Yes,
will
yes.
talk.
And one.
And he will
Yes,
talk.
and yes, and one of the things that I will tell anyone, I have no problem with a community, a committee of one, because I am a living witness. When I worked the CRE at my own local in local 3902 for a long time, it was just me, myself, and I. But all of a sudden, the participation has jumped up to 900%, and I can go anywhere and do anything for the national, for my local, for the district. And the CRE team at Local 3902 continues on. And that's why I am so excited. And that is why I always encourage people, just try to do it alone, and you'll get someone to catch up and to join your team. And I know we've kind of gone a little bit long on this, but I can't wait until, and I'm sorry, Tay, we kind of got caught up. We didn't get to the part on discussing media and social media and how certain hashtags are being banned. And I do apologize for that, but I hope you'll come back on next week and we can start off with that, because we have really started and opened up an awesome discussion. As we come down to the final minutes of the show, our Union brothers and sisters and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 2 years on the picket lines. And yet, while they are out striking, they're still turning out the news for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. Listen, I just want to make sure to give another shout out to CWA Local 3140 for all that they have done and in getting their committees up off the ground and welcoming us to their local gender justice and implicit bias training. January is National Human Traffic, Slavery, and Poverty in America Awareness Month. Take action and learn more today. When you take time to learn about others around you, you're making the world a better place. Awareness campaigns serve as a powerful reminder that there are steps we must all take in looking out for loved ones, the people in our community, and those who have impacted. It's time to take one big step together and make a change. An hour is not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CWA Human Rights Justice Hour Power broadcast. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small, and by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow, like the truth, but when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 a.m. Pacific, right here on KYOK 1140 a.m. and the all new 106.5 FM or your favorite podcast player. We will see you next week. And don't forget to pray for all those that have been affected in the Washington and